Jordan-Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
It's the Wishbone Podcast, your source for Auburn football discussion and commentary. Now, here are your hosts, Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer.
Hello and welcome to the Wishbone Podcast, brought to you in association with the WarEagleReader.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host,
John Ringer.
And tonight is part four of four, the concluding installment in our 2013 Auburn season preview. And John, I'm excited that we've gotten to cover the whole season up to this point and that we're going to close it out tonight. What do you think?
I'm excited, although it's some scary games to talk about.
Yeah, it doesn't end on a high note, I'm afraid, unless we're really going to go out on a limb now. So I feel like we've been very optimistic up to this point. I mean, within reason.
Yes, no, I think we have reasonable expectations. We're optimists, but we're not crazy.
Right. I've always said I'm just realistic enough that I get a lot of people on Twitter mad at me every time this year. But before we start, I have to say that tonight we are not brought to you by Red Diamond Sweet Tea because I don't have any with me right now. I'm just drinking water. So we're brought to you by water. It's a good part of life, water.
There goes the sponsorship.
Maybe we can get, you know, Poland Springs or something behind this. I don't know. Okay, well, we're going to jump on into it. First, of course, we always have to point out that you can contact the show, contact John or me or both. Twitter is probably the best way. We're pretty active on Twitter. At AU Wishbone is the show's address. And also at Van Allen Plexico and at JK Ringer. So you can contact us that way. And then there's also auwishbone@gmail.com. So we appreciate, again, everybody listening. And we're going to roll on into our first order of business. I guess we probably should mention the book. Let's see. You mentioned it 2 weeks ago. I mentioned it last week, so it's your turn again. Tell the folks out there what they can get.
Well, our book, Decades of Dominance, The History of Auburn Football in the Modern Era, is available on Amazon.com in paperback. As you prepare for football season, you're getting excited about it, you're thinking about it, it's a good time to grab it, read about Auburn during this time period. Think about, you know, the coaches, the players, the seasons. We talk about great games that happened in different eras. We talk about the rise and fall of Bowden, the rise and fall of Tuberville. We talk about, games that should have happened but didn't happen and the impact they had on Auburn seasons. And we spend a lot of time talking about great running backs at Auburn. Mm-hmm. And there's an excellent piece about the history of the stadium. So if you're interested in Auburn football, it's a very entertaining and useful book for you, we believe.
And we do close it out with the Gus Bus, the Auburn in the Future, where we kind of look ahead to the way the team will be, the program will be, even the stadium, you know, how it will be in the years to come. So, yeah, I think that you folks will enjoy it. And as I mentioned last week, we should have it out on Kindle for e-readers and so forth, probably before the end of August, I think. So this is going to be a very busy last of the summer coming up, at least for me. I've got a convention in Ohio this coming weekend. Dragon Con always conflicts with the opening of the season. That's always a pain, but that's coming up. And some other things going on. So, but you know, we'll have it out and ready by the end of August. I'm pretty confident. And of course, as I mentioned last week, John and I will individually be down for at least one game on the plains, and it looks like AU Bookstore is going to have us come in and each do a signing. And so I don't want to speak for John, but I'll certainly do it. I'm sure John will be up for it too.
Sure.
Yeah. So we'll be there probably pre-game, since those games are at what, 6 o'clock, 6:30, something like that.
Yeah, 6 Central, 7 Eastern, I believe.
So probably like for an hour in the afternoon, I'm imagining they'll have us in the AU Bookstore in Haley Center, and that should be cool. So. All right. Well, without further ado, we got some questions this week, didn't we?
We did. We're enjoying the questions. If you have more questions, please send them in. We'd be happy to talk about them.
And if James Jones sent us one this week, I missed it, and I apologize to him. And if I didn't miss it and he just didn't send one, then shame on you, James. We've been depending on you for part of our content. So get on the stick, baby. But let's see. Before you look at the couple of interesting points or questions that we did get, I have a question for you.
Okay.
And these are always fun because I like to put John on the spot and see if he can think fast. What was the last SEC football team to win the SEC in back-to-back seasons?
Good question.
I'll give you a hint. It was not
It was Florida?
It was not in this century.
It was Florida.
It was not Florida. Would you like to know the quarterbacks? It was two different quarterbacks. Maybe that's a good
point. Okay, it was Tennessee.
It was Tennessee in 19...
It was Peyton Manning and T. Martin.
Yes, 97 and 98. That's hard to believe that it's been that long. You know, what throws it off is that Alabama did not win the conference in 2011. LSU.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And so it's been a different team every year since starting in 1999. It's really remarkable. It says a lot about just how, you know, how many good teams there are in this conference and how it's, you know, you can be an 11-12 win team and not win the SEC. You can win the national championship and not win the SEC.
It's true.
Yeah.
And becoming more likely as we move to the 4-team playoff next year, when there'll be probably two SEC teams out of the 4 teams in the playoff, more likely that an SEC team that doesn't win the conference wins a national title.
That's an interesting point, yeah, that Alabama in 2011 seemed it was unprecedented. It just seemed so unprecedented, and yet it could be a trivia question in the future. What was the SEC team that won the national championship but did not win its conference that did that before there was a playoff?
That's true.
That'll be a very interesting, fun question. Yeah. Okay. I have to remember down the road, by the way, I've got to ask you and the listeners at some point my favorite college football trivia, which involves Miami Hurricane quarterbacks, but I'll save that for down the road.
Okay.
Let's see. What did we get? Did you get any questions, or did you see our questions?
We got a couple of questions. The first is Earl on Twitter pointed out that Auburn has not scored in the last 9 quarters of football.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Wow.
9 quarters. That's a lot of time in football world. That's like 5 hours in front of the TV, 6 hours in front of the TV of not scoring. I mean, after, you know, in a year in which just a couple of years ago we were averaging 45 points a game. And in like 2 years we go from 45 points a game to like 3 points a game or whatever we averaged last year. It's really amazing.
That's crazy.
It beggars imagination, as they say. The way he phrased it when Earl mentioned that was that we were scoreless in the last 9 quarters of SEC play. And I got to thinking about it, and I realized if you're as bad as we were last year, the end of your season will always be only SEC play because you're not going to be in a bowl game, and you're certainly not going to be in Atlanta.
It's true.
So it's SEC play, but it's also just football in general, as you said. So I guess that means the last time we scored would have been the first quarter against Georgia?
No, we didn't score against Georgia because that would be 2 whole games would be 8 quarters. So it would be Georgia
okay.
Shut us out.
Yes.
Which we'll get to tonight, but I'm still mad at Tom Grant. We're going to get to that. But,
okay.
It was the game before that. Was the end of Texas A&M? Was that the game before?
You know what? SEC game, you know what it is? You know what it was? We beat Alabama A&M the week before Georgia. So that's why he said SEC play. My apologies to Earl. Earl, you're exactly right. It's 9 quarters of SEC play, and we beat Alabama A&M, but the week before, I guess, was probably Texas A&M or Ole Miss or somebody like that, and we didn't score in that quarter. So, yeah, so that's – I could dig out the Auburn schedule from last year. I think maybe John is doing it, but
– keep going.
But the point is that Earl is exactly right. If you throw out the little, you know, the the well-respected foe, but you know, not really able to measure up on the field, Alabama A&M. It's been nine quarters of SEC play, and that's pretty depressing. That's I have a feeling that's going to change against Mississippi State when we open conference play this year. I think it's going to change very quickly.
I think it's going to change very quickly in SEC play.
Yeah.
With Gus, our offense, you never know, you know, how good the overall season is going to be, but I'm confident that we're going to score some points.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to be a different team.
All right, well, we're going to keep going.
Okay.
We have another question, and it's another good one from the Tiger Talk on Twitter. And his question is, if Nick Marshall does not win the starting quarterback job, what becomes of him? Does he transfer? Does he move to another position? Remember, he started out as a defensive back at Georgia. Mm-hmm. So what happens with Nick Marshall if he does not win the starting quarterback job?
And see, that's a really – well, first I've got to say my answer to that is I don't think it's going to be an issue because I think he is going to win it.
But it's possible.
Having said that, it is a really interesting question considering that he's coming in here with the attitude of I'm coming in to win the Heisman Trophy. And, you know, basically, he didn't say this, but basically he said that, and he didn't say, but basically be the next Cam Newton almost. And if that's his attitude, which is a great attitude, I'm all for it, but if that's his attitude and he doesn't even get the starting job over the two guys we have now and a freshman, then, A, it's on him to a certain degree, right? I mean,
sure.
And B, I could see where he would be very despondent and not particularly thrilled to change to a different position. I think he probably would have rather have gone somewhere where he could be the quarterback than, yeah, what do you do with that? I don't know. I don't know if he'd want to. I don't know.
Well, but
you'd have to know his personality to know how he would react, sure. I think, is the thing.
I think the other thing is you'd have to know how the quarterback competition went. I mean, was it a, you know, borderline judgment call? Could have gone to him, could have gone to the other guy, and they picked the other guy? Because then it's a situation where you say, hey, hold your head up, go out there, keep practicing hard. The guy could twist his ankle, fall off the curb tomorrow. Yeah. Or, you know, he could come out and throw two interceptions the first quarter, and then you're in the game. So I think if it's that kind of situation, he stays a quarterback. If he comes out there and, you know, he's the fourth best quarterback, let's just say I don't believe that's going to happen. Let's say it does. Let's say he's, you know, he's not working in the offense. He's throwing a lot of interceptions in practice and it's not working out well. Or, you know, he has some injuries in fall practice and he can't stay healthy and he gets passed in the depth chart by everybody. He can't get the reps. Then he has a decision to make. Does he want to stay at quarterback and try and, you know, make a move later this year or next year during spring practice, or does he want to jump over and play defensive back and potentially help the team out there? So it's a good question. I'm with you. I believe that at some point he's going to win the starting quarterback job, but it's an interesting question about what he would do. And if we had a great quarterback, you'd go, wow, I'd love to have him jump over and play defense because he could do it, you know,
right.
But
right. Well, I hope his reaction, if he doesn't get it, is he doesn't take a page out of Clint Mosley's book is all I ask, if you recall.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I'm all for, you know, I'm emotional that I really want to win the job, but I also just don't, bless his heart and everything, but I just, that wasn't a great moment in Auburn football history when poor old Clint sort of broke down, you know, on television because he lost out to Barrett Trotter. But I've always said, you know, if you can't beat out Barrett, again, bless his heart, Barrett Trotter was a great competitor. But if you can't beat out Barrett Trotter, then
hey, look, Barrett Trotter was fine. I was wishing for Barrett Trotter last year. Okay,
well, that's the truth.
Wishing he had come back for that last year.
He had his moments, you know. Barrett had his moments in the Chick-fil-A Bowl. He was awesome. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, he was awesome.
He was fun.
Here's the answer to what we were talking about a minute ago. We lost to Alabama, and the week before was Alabama A&M. I think I can be forgiven for forgetting we played a game between Georgia and Alabama because it's so unusual. We beat out Alabama A&M in the next to last, and then the one before Georgia that I was thinking of was New Mexico State. So you're right, John, it was Texas A&M, but it was 5 games back was our third SEC game. So, yeah, the fourth quarter of A&M, and then 2 games later Georgia, and then 2 games later Alabama. So, yeah, we're going to turn that around really fast. So, let's see. Those were our two questions, right? So we're okay. You've heard some good talk coming out of the practice.
Well, it's one of those things that comes out every year. Some reports about how the players are doing in the unsupervised summer practices. Coaches can't have direct contact, but all the new players are on campus. They're all working out with the old players. They call them captain's practices because the leaders on the team direct the practices, run the team through the offense, the defense, do the plays, get the new guys in there, get them reps, learning the position and what the assignments are, that kind of stuff. And there's been some news leaking out during SEC media days. It came out during this week. There was a lot of good comments about some of the freshman Auburn players. The big defensive linemen that we've signed this fall, they're coming in. Carl Lawson, Montravius Adams, Elijah Daniel, a lot of good reports about them. And then good reports about Nick Marshall. I mean, there's been a lot of good discussion about him, how he looks good. So I'm excited. You're always excited to hear that stuff coming out. And I look forward to, not far away, we actually start real practice so we can have real reports of how things are going.
Yeah, the thing about Nick Marshall that I remember hearing now was it Aaron Murray at Georgia saying that Marshall could throw the ball further than anybody he's ever seen?
That's right. He said he's the strongest arm of anybody he's ever seen.
Wow, that's that's very interesting, isn't it? I believe Aaron Murray was in the game with Cam Newton.
That's right.
So that's very interesting. I saw some of the stuff about the defensive linemen. It sounds like our young defensive linemen are about ready to play.
They're in shape. They're not doing that show up and got to work out to get it. A lot of guys come to college football and they're not physically mature enough or ready enough body wise to play. They have to go in the weight room for a couple of years to get there. But I think all the reports are that those guys are ready to play. So.
Yeah,
that's encouraging.
I saw a picture of Lawson. He just he looks like a comic book character with those muscles and everything. Good gosh.
Sure.
So yeah, I'm imagining if we can have some of these young guys just at least get in a few, rotate in and out with the older guys, with D Ford and that crowd. Man, you got to feel like we're going to be able to put some pressure from that up front, that front line.
You hope so.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about our middle still, the linebackers and everything. That's been a problem for a while. But certainly the defensive line, through thick and thin, has been a strength of the defense for quite a while now. And it looks like that's going to continue and maybe just get even stronger. So thank goodness. Because, that really is where it all starts, and ends, is with if you can get pressure from the front, the rest of it's almost, you'll pardon the expression, secondary. So that's very encouraging.
But I would disagree with you one thing. I think our defensive line has been bad the last couple of years. And I think the guys on the team currently that, have played a lot the last couple of years have been disappointing. And I think they should be looking over their shoulder because if they come out and play like that this year, they're going to get replaced.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's been play where they've been disappointing. But I just mean compared to how the linebackers have been.
Well, that's – yeah.
I mean, the defensive line was expected to be up here, and they've been kind of down here, but the linebackers were never even expected to be in the middle. They just expected to be bad, and they've been bad. So
they've been a train wreck. You're right.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I thought you were talking about compared to a good team.
Oh, no.
You're just talking about compared to how bad the linebackers are.
Compared to the rest of the team, yeah. I mean, so, all right, well.
That's fair.
All right, so, okay, anything else about the sort of the team in general, the players, all that before we.
No, I just, it's always encouraging to hear those reports, and I think they'll keep trickling out, so that's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, last week was what I have come to term Dragon Con for Alabama fans, or in Twitter parlance with a hashtag BammerCon, because, one of these events features people with no life who dress up in colorful outfits and fancy costumes to go and spend hours standing around a hotel ballroom while people look at them like they're crazy. And the other one is Dragon Con. So, and once again, it was the Alabama faithful, Bama Nation, that came through for us, right? I mean, you know, several dozen people came to cheer for Gus and to get autographs, and a number of people came for the other teams. And then when Saban rolls in, it's like, I don't know what metaphor to use, but just the multitudes descend upon River Chase and the Galleria and the Winfrey Hotel, and they wear their weird hats with the ring. Did you see that picture?
Yeah, I did. That was nice.
Yeah, that's real nice. Let's see. We had, before we get to the more substantive stuff, I just have to talk about BammerCon.
Okay.
We had the guy with the hat, and this was to me, this was the best part about it. When I first saw that picture, I said, okay, well, he's a knucklehead. He's got nothing better to do than to be a passionate Alabama fan. Far be it from me, right, to criticize anybody who's a passionate college football fan. That's what we do, right? I mean, that's fine. And I thought, look, he even took time out, like he and probably his girlfriend or something, to make that hat.
Mom,
to make that hat. And then I read he got it on eBay. And I'm just like, so his accomplishment was to buy something on eBay and not be ashamed to wear it in public. That was his accomplishment, to buy something on eBay and go to the Winfrey Hotel in it. Wow. I would have just had so much more respect if that was like his brilliant idea and he did it, you know. But because I'm telling you, all those folks at DragonCon that dress up in the costumes, they make those costumes. They don't go on eBay, right? I mean, you can make fun of them all you want, but they put a lot of hard work into that. And that dude just decided to buy something on eBay and show up and get in the newspaper. And I'm just like, wow, I'm just not impressed. The other guy that topped him was the dude who rolled up days earlier in his RV and just waited in the parking lot for days. And his quote was, "I didn't have anything else planned," unquote, right, for that week. And he goes in, and who did he compare his beloved head coach to, John?
Is that the guy that compared Saban to Hitler?
Yes. But and the reporter was like dumbstruck and said, you mean that as a compliment, right? It's like, oh, yeah, I mean it absolutely in a positive way. And I'm just thinking, you know, they really do come out of the woodwork for BammerCon.
They do.
They come out of the woodwork, and you just have to stare at them and wonder, you know, there but for the grace of God, maybe go I. Because, wow. Saban is Hitler, but in a good way. Because, you know. Mm. All right. Well, the other item I had from SEC Media Days, and then I want to talk about the actual news thing that's kind of news that came out, was Jay Prosh, our fullback, who is in his second year, right? But he's a senior. He was asked by a reporter during his press conference time, what was it like to have been a freshman on the 2010 national champion Auburn team?
Nice.
And he just kind of stared back in a minute and says, I was in Illinois. And the guy's like, you weren't on that team? No, I transferred last year. Oh, so you didn't play on that team? No. So it's good to know that the reporters at Media Days are as informed as the lesser informed fans that show up. Because I guarantee you, the guy in the hat and the Hitler guy, they at least wouldn't have asked Jay Prosh that question.
They would certainly would ask that of any Alabama player because they know their life stories.
Exactly. So. Exactly. They certainly do. Okay. All right. But the big story for us, right, coming out of Media Days, and I don't know if this was worthy of being a big story or not, but what was the big story that kind of came out related to our crowd?
Well, the big story as it relates to Auburn was the discussion between Malzahn and Brett Bielema and in some level Saban about the hurry-up, no-huddle offense and the risk to injury, where Malzahn took the stage. And one thing I want to say about him was I really appreciated his comments and the way he talked and the things that he spoke about, because after – several years of listening to Gene Chizik, it's great to hear Malzahn speak, because I think I think Spencer Hall referred to Gene Chizik as a white noise generator. And I thought that was perfect because that if you've listened to him week after week after week, you know, on the call-in show and the post-game show at press conferences before games, he tells you absolutely nothing. He's polite.
Yeah.
He's calm, you know, but you got nothing out of him. You could put a statue up there and get more information out of it. So it was exciting to have Gus up there, a little more energy, and hoping for a little more information this year.
You got to let me comment on that, though, because that's just great. I'm wondering, you know, Chizik had a setting on him where you could switch between waterfall, rainstorm, birds over the lake. But, yeah, I mean, Coach Chizik, would you describe the progress of your quarterbacks? Well, we plan to play football this year, and it's going to be a good game. There's 11 men on each side, and one from one side of the ball.
Here's the other one. We had a great week of practice.
We're looking forward to it. Oh, my gosh.
I had a great week of practice. I'm so tired of hearing about that.
Oh. And it's not, well, you know, Gus wears a nice suit and tie and everything, and Chizik would do that most of the time. But after the national championship, Chizik basically decided, I'm the national champion. I just can bust out the leather jacket and just rock the Elvis look, you know,
sure,
the Fonzie look, and get away with it. And I tell you what, if there's one thing the last year or so has taught us all, it's that winning the national championship does not buy you much of anything these days. It is, what have you done for me lately? It's the Janet Jackson theorem.
It's the truth.
It just doesn't last long. You don't get any immunity. So, so Gus was asked about it and about what they had said. Gus went first, I think, or was earlier than Bielema, right?
Gus went first, and what he said was that he heard these comments about the risk of injury caused by the hurry-up, no-huddle offense, and his response was he genuinely thought it was a joke the first time he heard it.
I thought they were joking.
And so then he went on to make his comments about how he doesn't see it that way. But Bielema was right after him. He came up and said he really does think it's a risk of injury, that the hurry-up, no-huddle offense is dangerous in college football, and they should look at changing the rules, allow defensive players to substitute more often. And they went kind of back and forth through the media that day, and it turned into kind of a big story. Some of it, you know, some of this was caused by, there actually was an article on Sports Illustrated before that by Stuart Mandel, and he talked to a couple of doctors that have looked at this issue, and there is no definitive study or data about the injury issue. This is what it all comes down to me, is nobody has done the definitive study to prove that there is a medical a direct correlation between the hurry-up, no-huddle offense and increased risk of injury. So in that sense, it's all inferred from players more tired, players don't take good form when they're tackling, therefore it leads to more injuries. But, you know, that's a case where you could say, well, teams aren't in good shape. If the idea is players are tired and therefore they get injured, then we should do away with overtime, because there's nothing more dangerous. You turn around and see one of these games or the four or five overtime games where the player's about to fall over at the end of it. That's the kind of game where somebody could really easily get hurt when they're can't even stand up at the end of those games. You remember that Georgia game many years ago, but even last year, I think Tennessee and Missouri played a four or five overtime game. And to me, you talk about the number of plays in those games, it's more than the number of plays in a game with a hurry-up, no-huddle offense. And I think some of this is, you know, it's perceived as whining by Bielema and on some level by Saban to try and limit the effectiveness of the no-huddle offense because so many teams are using it. And Gus has said he's going to try and go fast this year. He's going to try and go as fast as he possibly can. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a direct line drawn in the SEC now between the teams that want to go fast, the teams that want to go slow, the traditional offense. And it's going to be very interesting. I think this is one of the big stories over the next two or three years in the SEC is how does this work out? And if the teams that run the hurry-up, no-huddle offense have a lot of success – you know, is it going to be more pressure to change the rules?
Yeah. I tell you what, I've got several points to come back on with that. One is I watched the Alabama-Texas A&M game over again this past week. It's somebody posted it on YouTube, and I quickly downloaded it before it went away. It's probably still there, though. And you can watch the whole game with no commercials on YouTube for free. And it's fascinating. Several things are fascinating about it. But the reason I'm bringing it up is that Texas A&M went very, very fast in that game, at least for the first three quarters, roughly. And they scored 20 points well before the first quarter was over in Tuscaloosa. So if you think Saban isn't concerned about this offense, his beloved, vaunted defense gave up three touchdowns. It was only the incompetence of A&M's kicker that kept it from being 21 or even 24 to nothing, which sounds kind of familiar as a score in Tuscaloosa, doesn't it? At one point in the third quarter, when you're trying to save your three timeouts, right, Texas A&M got some momentum going. They crossed midfield. They were down to like Alabama's 30 or 20, and they were just go, 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 go. It looked like, you know, Gus was calling the plays. They were go, go, go. And the Alabama defensive coaches, three Alabama defensive players were waving to be subbed out because they couldn't barely stand up. And the defensive coaches were trying to get them swapped out, and they ended up with 10 men on the field and had to burn a timeout in the third quarter because of that. And so you don't think Saban wasn't melting down over that, right? So that's a big part of it. Is it, even if it doesn't hurt anybody, even if it, you know, whatever you want to say, it causes confusion for the defense and causes them to burn timeouts just to try to reset what they're doing. So they really hate it. Now, what Gus said was he thought they were kidding, and he said I think what the real concern should be about injuries when we're running an offense like this is defensive players pretending to be hurt to slow things down. And he said that gets at the sportsmanship of the game. I thought that was a really good point. It's one I've been making for about a month now, which is that the injuries on defense are the fake injuries. If you watched Oregon versus Cal a couple of years ago, there were Cal players that were standing around and then would suddenly they'd look over at their coaches and they'd suddenly drop down the ground. It looked like a South American soccer game. You know.
Oh yeah, no, I there was one particular, like the guy got hit by a sniper or something.
Exactly. Yeah, you're looking for who shot him because clearly nobody hit him. Right, and I think that was a very good issue. Now Belima's butthead's response to that.
Hey Beavis. What? Let's go fishing.
But his response to that, and now John's going, oh, well, Lord, what have we gotten into? But his response to that was he believes in, I forget exactly how he phrased it, but he said he believes in real American football.
That's right.
So apparently now, you know, Gus's offense is un-American. It's some kind of foreign thing where they play cricket and soccer and hurry up, no huddle offense on American football.
Yeah, it's so un-American that the Patriots and the Broncos and a bunch of other teams are running it last year.
You gotta love a team called the Patriots runs this un-American. This is some sort of Soviet era. I don't believe the Soviets would have run hurry up, no huddle. They would have believed in lots of huddling and having instruction. You know, they'd have had the political officer out there in the huddle. Real American football. But the point that I think Kevin Skarbinski or somebody made this week was, well, the kind of football that he and Saban like is that grind it out, wear you down, mash you into the dirt football. Is that not more dangerous? I mean, if they're deliberately trying to wear the, you know, as Saban says, make the other team not want to play anymore, isn't that at least as dangerous as just running around fast?
I think that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, 3 yards in a cloud of dust, usually the goal is to just bust the other guy in the nose a million times. I mean, you know, Pat Dye, say, line them up and see who's the better man, you know, so that's... That, I don't know. That just seems to me. But anyway, we now know that Brett Belima has said he's not a comedian. And so we're going to take everything he says seriously from now forward. That should be a real treat. And somebody made the interesting point. If you want to not, you know, if you want to limit injuries, just don't blitz or end the game after the third quarter.
Well, or the other one that's coming eventually is doing away with kickoffs.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the most injury-prone play in the game, and that one is coming at some point down the road.
They'll just start at the 25 or something? Or
yeah, something like that.
Have a golfer come out and chip a ball and see where it lands, and they...
Sure.
You have your golfer like you have your kicker.
It'll be disappointing, but it's coming.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I've always thought that the guy that catches the punt is eventually going to... Something's going to happen there, too. But anyway, what do you think this does to our rivalry with Arkansas, such as it is?
Well, I think it brings it up a couple notches. I mean, I think a lot of Auburn fans were kind of apathetic about Bielema and they didn't know what to feel about him. And now they know. They don't like him. You know, they've decided how they feel about him. They think, all right, yeah, we see how it is. So I think it's a good thing. I think, Bielema and Malzahn are kind of the new kids on the block in the SEC as head coaches. And so they have this whole rivalry thing going. It's good.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving along, we got a couple of commitments today. This is Sunday when we're recording this, and who did we pick up? Do you have I think I got the names here. Did you?
Auburn got two commitments today. Both were junior college players. One is a wide receiver named Dekeel Williams, who's mm-hmm. a four-star, one service, five-star in another, mm-hmm. Committed Auburn. He's been committed at LSU. He's the number one JUCO receiver in the nation, and that's very exciting. He's been compared to that Cordell Patterson guy that went to Tennessee and had did an excellent job the past couple of years, the NFL now. And he's been compared to him very favorably. And this is the coach who's coaching him in junior college. It's the same guy who turned out like Terrence Cody and Vic Ballard. And he says this guy's as good a football player as those two guys were. So that's very encouraging. We also got defensive tackle commitment from Georgia Military College, and it's a guy who redshirted this past year, so he'll have 3 years to play two, I believe.
Yeah, I think so.
And his name is Devario Lawrence.
Yeah, yeah. So. And the other day we picked up the one fella that said that he was so committed to Auburn that he wouldn't play for – the only way he wouldn't play for Auburn is if he goes to the other side. And I immediately thought he meant and plays for Saban. He says goes to the other side. But he said goes to the other side and plays for Jesus. And I immediately was trying to think what offense Jesus runs now. I don't know.
Stephen Truitt, is that the guy's name?
Yeah, it may be. That sounds right. I can't imagine Jesus goes in for the hurry up, no huddle. So I think if he wants to play that kind of offense... I figure Jesus is more of a 3 yards in a cloud of dust kind of guy, so I'm going to get in big trouble for this little segment.
You are.
Yeah, okay, I'll move
but
on.
The good news is that Auburn's doing great in recruiting, and that and the key factor, again, is Damian Craig.
There it is.
He's the man behind the curtain on all this stuff. Yes. He's the guy that's connecting with the recruits, especially in the Mobile area, but recruits all over, and he's making a huge difference for Auburn.
He is absolutely tearing it up. And those guys always cite him and say, you know, I can talk to him. He understands, you know, where I came from and everything. And that just is very encouraging. So way to go, DC. This commitment today moved Craig back to number one in the recruiter rankings. Now, I personally think that the idea of having recruiter rankings is about 15 bridges too far. But if they're going to have them, an Auburn guy that I love is going to be number one, then I'll be happy about that.
That's right.
All right. Okay, let's get to our previews of the last three games. This shouldn't take forever, probably. We'll see how this goes. The first one is very interesting, isn't it?
It is.
I'm not sure what to think. The more I've been studying up on this one, the more I've equivocated. So who is our game 10 opponent, John?
The Tennessee Volunteers in Knoxville.
In Knoxville. In the big empty house.
I think they're hopeful that their new coach, Butch Jones, will turn it around a little bit and there'll actually be some people in the seats.
Well, I tell you, the reign of Derek Dooley was catastrophically bad. It was historically, epically bad, which is shocking to me, frankly.
Well, you say that, and they were like one play away from a couple of games last year, especially they had a four or five overtime game against Missouri. One play away, they win that game. Then they go to a bowl game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe they win the bowl game and they're, you know, 7-6 or whatever. And Dooley's still around. So It was, I think it was really was that close. And, you know, but they replaced him with a good coach. I think Butch Jones did a good job at Cincinnati, continuing what Brian Kelly had built there. And I think it's going to be a good game.
Yeah, it's interesting if you look back at their schedule. They were competitive with Florida for a while, lost by 17. They put 44 on Georgia and lost by 7 to Georgia. That's pretty impressive. They lost by 10 at Mississippi State. But they played South Carolina in Columbia within 3, 38-35. That's pretty impressive. But then the very next week, they had to score 55 to beat Troy. And do you know how many yards Troy rolled up on Tennessee in Knoxville last year?
I do not.
Over 700.
Yeah, this comes to one of the main topics I'll talk about. And that is, their defense was epically bad last year.
Yeah.
You talked about that Florida game. Florida averaged like 9 yards a play against them. And I don't know if you remember, Florida's offense was awful last year. They were terrible on offense.
Florida's passing offense last year was worse than ours. Think about that.
Yes, it was. And they averaged 9 yards a play. So that just shows you how bad the Tennessee defense was. They had a great offense last year with the two receivers, Hunter and Cordell Patterson and Tyler Bray. They could really throw the ball around and score a lot of points. But their defense was terrible, especially against the pass. I mean, total defense, you know, they were 107th in the country. Scoring defense, they were 104th. They gave up almost 36 points a game. You know, they were 111th in pass defense. So almost 300 yards a game passing against them. So, you know, they made Auburn's defense look not so bad.
Well, this is what concerns me, is that in a lot of ways, they're kind of a mirror image of us last year. They had they had talent, but the defense never worked the way it was supposed to. They were doing something new. They were in a 3-4 or something. It just wasn't happening for them. They've gone back to 4-3 now. Plus, they've lost a lot of the offense. You know, they had a really good offense last year, but they're going to have to kind of go back and start over. So like us, they're looking for a quarterback, looking to get an offense put together. They're going to run a kind of a hurry-up offense. I don't know if it's going to be the same as ours, but they're going to run something like that. They're going to have their offensive line back, which was not that bad last year. Their running game actually last year was not that bad either.
No, and I mean, their offensive line actually was really good last year.
Mm-hmm.
And they got 4 guys back, and the guy who's filling the other spot played some. So they may have the best offensive line in the SEC coming back. So if not, they're in the top 2.
So here's how I would sort of sum it up for us in Tennessee. We're both going to have defenses that have potential and are trying to get better, and we're both going to have maybe a decent running game and a decent to good offensive line. And so I think it could either come down to special teams or to which team finds a quarterback that's more effective. And again, this will be game 10, so the hay will be in the barn, as they say, by then. We'll know what we have and what they have. There won't be any – it's not like this will be game 1 in the Georgia Dome and we're feeling each other out to figure out who –
Well, unless one of these teams or both these teams have had disappointing seasons to this point, at which time they may have switched to going to a freshman quarterback or something.
That's true.
I mean, if Auburn's having a bad year, could be a situation where we're rolling out Jeremy Johnson in the second game, or – Tennessee's having a bad year. They got, you know, they're not sure who their quarterback's going to be. It could be a true freshman at this point. They got, you know, they've got 4 guys battling for the job too. So they could have a true freshman starting against us in this game.
Yeah.
The difference for us is it's on the road. So
yeah, I'm going to say I'm not sure I want a true freshman to roll out in Neyland Stadium, even though it's not the Neyland of 1999 or whatever. I'm not comfortable with the idea of putting a true freshman quarterback in unless he's played like 8 games already and is totally, you know, locked in, at which point he's really not a freshman anymore. So
that's fair.
Okay. So any other thoughts about Tennessee?
No, I mean, I think they, like I said, really good offensive line. They got a couple of running backs coming back. Defensively, they have some talent. They have a couple, you know, one excellent linebacker. They got a solid defensive tackle. I think up the middle, they're going to be, you know, tough on defense. The outside, and then the secondary was so bad last year, but some of that was just young guys. And with new coaching, you know, maybe they'll get better. They got a couple of former Auburn coaches, Willie Martinez and Tommy Thigpen, are on that staff.
Do we have to call Martinez a former Auburn coach?
He was.
He had a cup of coffee. Yeah. Their schedule is pretty brutal, and I lost it. Oh, here it is. Because after Austin Peay, they have Western Kentucky, but that's Bobby Petrino's Western Kentucky. Ooh, scary. And then they go go ahead.
I'll be watching that game.
I know. I'm telling you. Then they go to Oregon, to Florida. They have a break with South Alabama. Then they've got Georgia and South Carolina back-to-back games. Not back-to-back weeks, back-to-back games. So that means that, get this, they have four games out of five in a row between mid-September and mid-October. They have four out of five games in a row where their opponents have a combined record of 12-11, 12-11. That's what, 46 and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 7. 46 and 7 last year.
That's not good.
That's not good. And then the next week they go to Alabama. So 59-8. They have a five-game stretch, more or less, if you don't count South Alabama, of that many, what did I say, 59-8 or something? Good gosh.
You got to think, it's a miracle if they win one of those games.
Yes. And then they go to Missouri, which was tough for them. And then guess who visits after all that stretch?
Us.
So I keep thinking they're going to be looking at us exactly the way we're looking at them, which is a winnable game late in the season. And I think this is going to be a dogfight, just a war, because both teams are going to know that this is a game that they can win and they really need it.
And I think maybe our one thing to really think about is if Tennessee gets crushed in some of those, you know, middle of the season games against the tough teams. Mm-hmm. Again, at Oregon, at Florida, Georgia at home, South Carolina at home, at Alabama, that's pretty rough.
Yes.
So they come out of that beat up, you know, 0-5 in that stretch. Maybe they've turned to a freshman quarterback or something. You know, maybe their team's beat up. Maybe they're down-spirited. I think that could be a real chance for Auburn to take advantage of them at home.
Man. So, but I think they're going to see it the same way. So, yeah, I think this is
sure.
That's a really a toss-up game. What's your verdict?
I think we're going to win. I think this is a game we can win.
You felt like we were going to lose. You're kind of leaning lose Arkansas, win Tennessee.
Yes.
I'm kind of the opposite now.
That's fair.
All right. So to balance this out, I'm not sure. So to balance this out, I'll go we lose to Tennessee, beat Arkansas. And so you and I now have us, what, 7-3?
7-3 or 6-4. Because remember, I had the Ole Miss games kind of tossed.
Yeah, let's see. So we had LSU. And I lost my schedule again. Dang it. I'm just not very organized. But anyway. Well, we'll figure it out at the end.
Texas A&M.
Yeah, LSU.
Yeah.
Seemed like there was one more that we but anyway. Well, let's go ahead and look at Georgia. Game 11. You know, this is one that it's at home. It's kind of weird to be playing Georgia and Alabama in Jordan Hare.
Talk for a minute again about the whole SEC scheduling thing and Georgia being here again. It's so weird.
Yeah, they're because of Texas A&M and Missouri coming in, right? They had to redo the whole schedule. Actually, they had to redo it twice because they were working on it to fit 13, and then they added Missouri and had to go back and redo it again. And so they're still trying to work out the rotation with where you play six other teams in your division and then one permanent in the other division and one rotating for a total of eight. They've got to go to nine. I'm sorry. They've just got to go to nine. In fact, I think it was maybe Stuart Mandel or somebody that raised this point this week that there's going to come a time when the SEC realizes that they need a ninth conference game for schedule strength for the playoff, because you're going to have the Pac-12 and the Big Ten and all playing these nine conference games and having a tougher schedule. While he was pointing out that the SEC, that ninth game tends to be, you know, an Appalachian State or a Citadel or somebody like that. So South Alabama, you know, so it's almost like an imperative that the SEC get a ninth conference game, not only so I can see Auburn in Missouri more often, which is my big personal stake in it, right? But also because it's going to hurt us getting at least, you know, getting maybe two teams or maybe even one in a down year into the four-team playoff. So, you know, because the strength of schedule won't be as good. And we don't know yet who's going to be on that committee, but there's starting to be some sounds that it will be athletic directors, maybe, which would be an interesting choice, I think. So, did I leave off anything that you had in mind there?
No, but it's just interesting that we're playing them again
right
at home. And are we going to play? Is this how it's going to work? And have Georgia and Alabama at home back to back, and then both away? That'll be a tough end.
Well, that's what I've been saying. I've been saying all along is we played. Which one did we play at home last year? Alabama?
Georgia.
I'm sorry. I didn't get to go, so I don't know, right? I mean, I watch it on TV, and I don't quite get that whole experience, right? Yeah, so so last year we had Georgia, and now we get Georgia again. And I keep wishing that these were good years for Auburn, really good years, so that we could get a couple of big wins over Georgia while we've got them at home. I hate dropping two games to Georgia in 2 years when they're at home in Auburn. You know, it's just, that's just kind of a wasted opportunity, and it's frustrating. So, but that's what we have to deal with. So yeah, I guess we have to play at Georgia next year. There's no way they could play 3 years in a row at Auburn, could we? So
I'd be okay with me,
but I mean, that would mean we'd have to play Alabama twice at home, which again is fine with me, except I can't imagine Alabama would ever.
No way they're going to get away doing it.
Just a few years ago, they wouldn't play once in Auburn. Are they going to suddenly play twice? No. So I'm really looking forward to seeing the 2014 schedule just to see what in the world is going to go on. The only thing I can think of, it seems like somebody on Twitter gave me a suggestion that made sense, but the only thing I can think of right now offhand is another home game with Georgia. Just to get it back, you know, make it three in a row.
Cycle.
Just to make it, just to get it back. I don't see any other way to do it.
Too bad for Georgia.
So, yeah, you really hate it. Okay, well, So what we've got so far is the games that we both agree we're losing is LSU and Texas A&M, and we have divided, and you're saying maybe Ole Miss. And then we've split back and forth on Arkansas and Tennessee. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 3 right now for me, and 6 and 4 for you.
That's fair.
All right. So what is your thoughts about actually playing Georgia?
Well, first of all, lasting memory of last year's game is Georgia defensive coordinator Todd Grantham leaving his starters on the field for the entire game and encouraging them to not let Auburn score at the end of the game. I'm not going to forget that anytime soon. I thought it was very unsportsmanlike, and you know, there's going to be a day coming down the road, maybe not this year, maybe not next year, but there's going to be a day coming where we have a chance to tack on a couple touchdowns against Georgia, and we're going to do it. We're absolutely going to do it, and we're going to enjoy doing it because they deserve it. I think the thing that you need to know about Georgia is they're going to have the best offense in the SEC, and that I'm including them in with a team that has the returning Heisman Trophy winner quarterback. Georgia's going to be better than them. They got a lot of starters back on offense. They got an excellent quarterback. They got good receivers, good running backs, good line. They're going to score a ton of points on people. And they also had that thing where the team has been together a couple years. You know, Bobo's gotten better as a play caller, and their offense knows what they want to do. They know when the defense shows them something, how they're going to respond. So I think their offense is going to tear up the SEC this year. Defensively, they lost a ton of players to the NFL. I think they're going to be okay at linebacker. They got a couple guys who played a lot coming back there. But secondary, they're going to have to play some young guys. And so they may be more games in a shootout this year than in the past. I think last year their defense was really, capable of winning the SEC. But this year they're going to have to win games more, 35-25 kind of stuff.
Well, they didn't play Texas A&M last year. I think that would have been a very interesting game. Certainly a lot of points.
Sure.
At least this year they do pick up LSU. And I think that could hurt them because South Carolina is right on their heels. And, in fact, you know, South Carolina beat them down pretty good last year. It was just the fact that Steve Spurrier loves to point out that Georgia did not play any of the top three teams in the West. Of course, Alabama didn't play any of the top three teams in the East until the championship game. It's the first time in history. Did you realize that? It's the first time in history that the two division winners did not have to play any of the top three teams in the other division.
And that's why everyone has been whining about schedules the whole offseason.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's actually empirical evidence this time that it actually made a difference. I don't know how much difference it made with Alabama, although Texas A&M was one game away from beating Alabama out because they would have had they would have had the tiebreaker.
I know they would have. So if Alabama had to play at Georgia or at Florida, come on.
Well,
at South Carolina, those would have been tough games.
And if Texas A&M had to play Kentucky instead of Florida, for example,
then
Texas A&M, it wouldn't have, Alabama wouldn't have had to do anything else. A&M would have had one loss and the tiebreaker over Alabama.
They'd have won the West.
They'd have won the West, absolutely. Yeah. So it's amazing how close A&M actually came last year, and playing Florida versus playing, whoever Alabama played. I guess they played Kentucky or somebody. I mean, they had to because they played the easy team. So
that's right.
Georgia, what do you make of their running backs? I keep hearing all this talk about how great Georgia's running backs are, and I don't want to take anything away from them, but I guess I haven't gotten the sense that they are just these epic backs like some in SEC history, but the numbers seem to argue that they're right up there. What do you make of those two guys, Marshall and Gurley?
They're really good. They just are. They're very physical, productive, fast running backs, and they're going to get better. So, I think Georgia's set at that position for a couple of years. So, they're both productive runners that, they can rotate in and out, so neither one gets worn down in the game. So they have good legs in the second half. So, with their passing game so good, with the quarterback so good, to be able to run the ball consistently in the SEC, to be able to do play action and stuff, it's a huge advantage for them. So, I think they're pretty good players. Neither one of them is Herschel or anything, but they're good players. I mean, how about this? They're the Lars Tate category of Georgia running back, Rodney Hampton category. They're in that category.
And Murray's about to pass David Green in Georgia and maybe in college football or SEC or something, yardage or, all kind of statistics he's racking up. I guess because he's been playing since he's a freshman.
Yep.
He was playing in our game. He played against Cam, and he's still there. So, they have a great offense. And their defense, people are saying their defense last year statistically ended up more mediocre than you would have thought. But I watched a good bit of Georgia last year, and I thought their defense was pretty darn good every time I watched it.
They had some games where they gave up a lot of points, and you didn't understand why. They had a lot of guys picked high in the NFL draft, a lot. Mm-hmm. So they had plenty of talent. That wasn't the issue. And they have a few guys coming back, and they have some experienced guys on the bench who will step up. But they had, on defense, they had as much talent as anybody in the SEC last year, but they didn't always show it. They just had some weeks where, the other team scored a lot of points.
You look at their schedule, and they really did have a relatively easy walk. They get here's their schedule last year: Buffalo, at Missouri, Florida Atlantic, Vanderbilt, Tennessee, at South Carolina, at Kentucky, Florida, Ole Miss, Auburn, Georgia Southern, Georgia Tech.
There you go.
There's no Texas A&M, there's no Alabama until Atlanta, there's no LSU. That's a schedule to get you to Atlanta, isn't it?
That is.
Yeah. So
it did the job, but it's tougher this year for them. They open at Clemson.
Yeah.
We're the same time we're playing Washington State, they're going to be in Clemson, so that'll be fun.
And 11-2 Clemson followed by 11-2 South Carolina. And then and then 2 weeks after that, or 3 weeks, they have an open date, and then 2 weeks after the open date, 10-3 LSU. So they've got an 11-2, 11-2, and 10-3 in the first four games.
Little tougher start this year.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It gets a bit easier in the second half, but it did last year too. Okay, so your verdict on the Auburn Georgia game then? How do we match up, and can we make a game out of this?
I mean, I just think Auburn's defense is going to be better this year. It's going to be improved, but we're not going to be able to stop Georgia and shut them down. I think Georgia's going to score 30 points, and Auburn will score in this game, unlike last year.
Unlike last year,
but it's going to be more like 35-20 or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think we'll get an early score somewhere in there, and then get a couple of late ones, and 38-20, something like that, probably some garbage points. So. All right. Well, and then comes the archenemy, the great Satan, the enemy of good thinking and right thinking people everywhere. The team from the other side of the state, the team up the road, the Alabama Crimson Tide comes to Auburn with their, at this point, they think playing for their third consecutive national championship in their minds. How do you see Alabama this year?
Well, I think the first thing is Alabama's offensive line was the key behind the last two national titles. That was the most dominant unit in college football last year, and they lost the three best players in that line to the NFL. Their offensive line last year and the year before was the best offensive line in college football, I think, since, I don't know if I want to go all the way back to the 94, 95 Nebraska team, but there was a couple of other offensive lines. There was a Michigan offensive line that Auburn played in that bowl game.
Yeah.
That had about four first-round picks on it. As good as that line, probably better than that line. So, it really was the thing that drove that whole team. Their ability to run the ball down people's throats, to physically push even SEC defenses around, open up huge holes that made it easy for them to do play action passes, made it easy on the quarterback, and it also gave their defense a lot of breathing room where they're grinding out these huge long drives on the other team, wearing them down. So I think that was a big part of their success, and those guys are gone. So I think, they lost a lot of players on defense to the NFL. I think the defense is going to take a little bit of a step back, not a huge step back, but a little bit of a step back, especially against the run. And I think the offensive line is not going to be as good. They're not going to run the ball quite as dominantly, and I think they're not going to protect the quarterback quite as well. And so they're still going to be really good. They're going to be they may win the SEC again, but they're not going to be at the same level they've been the past couple of years.
Well, they still are going to have former Auburn star Cyrus Kwanju opening up holes for former Auburn star T.J. Yeldon. Oh, wait.
That's true.
They weren't actually ever – they were both, if those that don't know, I guess everybody knows, they both committed to Auburn and then were later swiped away by the great Satan. So what do you think of A.J. McCarron?
I think he's a good, productive player. He's efficient, doesn't make mistakes. But I also think, he benefited tremendously from playing in a system where the great offensive line, a great running game. They asked him to do a little bit more last year, but not too much. He's not doing the, Johnny Manziel carry the team on his back thing. And how often last year were they really behind? They had the one drive at LSU where they drove down the field, and he was great in that. He really made a bunch of plays. I thought that game was over at the end of the LSU game, but he made a bunch of plays to bring him back and win the game. And he's a very, very good college quarterback. So I think
and a great tattoo.
I have no comment about that, but I think some of it is he benefited because the offensive line was so dominant, and I think there's going to be more pressure on him this year to make plays on his own.
So do you think Alabama will be overall better than last year, worse than last year, the same?
Not as good as last year.
Not as good. Do we have a chance in this game? It is the Iron Bowl, after all.
Well, how many people said we had a chance in 2009?
Yeah, that's a very good
point. I mean, I'm going to say this because this Alabama team isn't as good as that team.
Yeah.
this Alabama team will not be as good as the 2009 team. Okay, that team had a ton of good players on it. So I think, this team will be very, very good. Won't be as good as last year. So I think, Auburn has a real shot at home. I think we're going to lose. I think I think their defense is going to be able to handle the guys we have on offense this year. And I think our offense our defense is going to be improved, but it's not ready for this game yet. So I'm putting this down as a loss.
Yeah, I think it could end up looking a lot like maybe the 99 game too, where we do some clever things and are scrappy for a while, but then they kind of wear us down. I think I'd like somebody to tell us, I think we should run the onside kickoff, every kickoff, though I'm not sure how many times we'll be kicking off in this game. But I'd like somebody to tell us, when was the last time we had an onside kick that didn't work? It had to have been 2008 or earlier.
Well, I mean, this is, again, in this game in particular, but in all college football games, you have to play to win. And this is one of those things that, I always respected coach like Jimmy Johnson or somebody like that, because they did this, is it doesn't matter if you lose 50-0 if you go down fighting.
Yeah.
If you lose 50-0 or 50-49, the difference is it doesn't make a difference because you both lost. But in one game, if you took a bunch of chances and hung around, it's worth trying. If you're playing a team that has more talent than you, then you have to try. You have to take risk in order to stay in the game, in order to have a chance to win the game. So in a game like this, Auburn's got to take risks. It's going to happen.
Yep. Well, my analysis simply is, I think it'll look like 2009 or 1999, and we'll make it interesting, but I just don't see us winning. So I guess we're going to drop three of the last four games. And I have us going 7-5. You have us going maybe 6-6. But guess what? We get in a bowl game.
That's right. Either way, it's bowl game material.
Bowl game. So, and if I'm correct and we're 7-5 and we win a bowl game, we're back where we were in 2009 already.
That's right.
Yeah, and even at 6-6, if we win a bowl game, that's quite a turnaround. That's over 100% improvement from 3-7 wins. So, all right, well, so what's your overall final word on the season in total before we wrap up?
Well, I mean, I think we're going to see dramatic improvement on both sides of the ball. Offense, I mean, the offense under Gus is going to be better than the train wreck that was last year. And I think under Ellis, the defense is going to be a lot better. I think, we still have some areas where maybe we need more, different players, better players. But I think the defense is going to be much better than it's been the last couple of years, where it's kind of gotten stagnant. We've had some real positions of weakness. We haven't made a lot of plays. The defense has kind of let the offense dictate the terms to it. But so I think we're going to be much better on both sides of the ball. I think, a lot of it comes down to who the quarterback is and how good that person is. But I think, it's not going to be enough to hang with upper-level SEC teams. But other than that, we'll be in every single game and have a chance to win a lot of them. So.
Yeah, and I do too. I think if nothing else, it'll be a fun team to watch, and it will never be boring, and you'll get your money's worth, and you'll enjoy kicking back in the living room if you're not there and watching it. And I tell you what, that goes a long way.
Absolutely it does. I mean, there's nothing worse than watching a bad, boring team.
Yes.
I mean, I think we're going to be entertaining, competitive. And the other thing is, I think this will be a team that you'll see it get better as the year goes along. I think that's the sign of good coaching, and I think that's what we're going to see this year, is this team, and that's what we saw in Gus's offense in the other years in particular, is the team gets better as the year goes along, and he kind of unveils the other little wrinkles and pieces of it.
One of the things, since you mentioned that I've got to point out, is I'm trying to think who wrote it, but there was an excellent series that ran this past couple of weeks on AL.com, and it looked at the history, basically the biography and coaching of Gus, and I was reading the one that was just utterly fascinating about his time at Arkansas.
It was our new beat reporter, Brandon Marcello.
Yeah, Brandon Marcello, yeah. He who tweets back and forth with me about like Avengers movies and stuff. Yeah, he's awesome.
That's right.
Well, yeah, and they had a long article where they actually interviewed Houston Nutt and interviewed
Mitch Mustain,
and it was fascinating. So if you're curious about Gus's time at Arkansas in particular, you got to go check that out at AL.com. That was some really good stuff. All right, our time is about gone. Any final thoughts before we move out of here?
Nope, just looking forward to talking about real football.
You know, real American soon football.
Real American football and not, you know, imaginary pretend football what we're thinking about.
Right, so. Right. And I'm ready for the Gold Cup to be over with. I've been watching the U.S. hammer El Salvador and Honduras upset Costa Rica. I'm so tired of Central America. I'm ready to get back to the rolling plains of Dixie, if I'm still allowed to say Dixie. The rolling plains of the state of Alabama, of East Alabama. So, all right, our time is up, and we thank you for yours. Remember to reach us on Twitter at AU Wishbone or at Van Allen Plexico or at JK Ringer. And, John, all that's left to say is War Eagle.
War Eagle, man.